All right, folks, welcome to Perfectionism is the Ultimate in Procrastinating. This week, we're really going to talk about how perfectionism is not a good thing. Tim's introduction activity for this week is going to talk about how to use some lesson plans at the beginning of a lesson or with students to get them to push beyond that need to be perfect. So, Tim, go ahead and take it away.
So we're going to take a look at the idea, and it's almost going to piggyback a little bit on what David kind of talked about last week, like this idea of doing speed over accuracy. This one, the intentionality, is also the idea of getting away from the accuracy concept. And a couple of different ways I do this is through my homework being like ungraded, basically. So when they do it on their first attempt, I don't expect them to have it 100%. So I expect them to give it a shot, see if they got it right. If they didn't get it right, try to figure out why they didn't get it right. And then they've got a handful of different tools to use. So in general, that's kind of one of my vibes of making sure we get away from this perfectionism is I don't want them to be perfect on their homework. And again, I think part of getting it wrong is part of that learning process like we talked last week. But more importantly, I find a lot of my students get into a point where like they want to get it right so badly, so quickly that they actually won't do it because they're afraid they're going to be wrong. And so I try to combat that. One with the ungradedness. And then two, I do some time trial stuff every once in a while with just like math facts. And at the high school level, this plays out interesting because a lot of the students have like the basic skills. And then there's some that have like literally never learned their times tables. And so there's like this interesting dynamic of me trying to get students to get out of the perfectionism and running into a wall with students that feel stupid because they're like, I need my calculator. I'm like, you don't need your calculator. Like, just crank through it as fast as you can. It doesn't matter if you get it right or wrong. I want you to just crank. And so trying to combat almost both sides at the same time is an interesting dynamic with that exercise. And again, like, it's not about the memorization of the skill. It would be great if my students had excellent mental math skills. And I challenge them all the time. And I practice all the time when I'm on the board in front of them. And they're like, how did you do that in your head? I'm like, 'cause I practice daily, multiple times a day. And so I try to encourage that behavior and I model that behavior. But again, this particular drill where I will call it a drill because it makes me think like sports, like my everyday drill kind of thing, right? Like this needs to become habit. And the habit that I'm really trying to form is that you don't get frozen by fear of getting it wrong. You go and you attempt it, and you know it's a repetitive, and we're going to do it multiple times, and so you're going to hopefully get better and better and better at it and eventually perfect it. So that one in particular, and then just in general with the not grading stuff, like I really do try to make sure the kids are not focused on the right answer, because when we get to the test, you know, just like game day in sports, now we got to do it right. Mm-hmm. But up until that point, you know, we're practicing and we're trying to perfect, which, you know, to me, that's what perfectionism is you got to get something on the table so you can perfect it. If you are frozen because you're afraid you're not going to do it right, you're not a perfectionist. You're a procrastinate. You know, you procrastinate is what you're doing. You're just not doing anything. So don't hide behind the excuse that you're a perfectionist if you can't do something to then perfect it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, right? I think you and I were talking about like that idea of you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. It's that same kind of thing, right? You can't take the perfect shot if you don't take the first shot. One question I had for you when you were talking about the ungraded homework is how you go about communicating that with your students. Like, how clear are you with the fact that it's ungraded, and do you kind of explain your why behind that to them, or how does that all work for you?
Yeah. So kind of part of the start of the year routines, right? Like I will put up the, you know, within that first week, we'll have our first homework assignment, you know, which a lot of what we do in class anyways, but I call it a homework just in case they do need to do it at home. They're not like, buddy, you said it was classwork. I'm only going to do it in class. I'm like, no, you didn't finish it in class. Do it at home. So now I just call it homework and we do it in class. And so it's wordsmith, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, the first time I show them, I'm like, hey, check this out. When you're done to save your work, hit submit. And when you hit submit, you'll have this little button that pops up that says view score. When you click on view score, it'll tell you if it's right or wrong. It won't tell you what the right answer is, but green means good, go. Next, red means no, and go try it again. And then I show them where like the embedded videos are. I show them where the extra recordings from class are and all the things where they can go back and get additional feedback and support in trying to get to the right answer. But they know that ultimately, like in 2-3 weeks, it's going to be graded because they have access to all the right answers. So if they don't get 100% or at least like 80%, it's just laziness. Interesting. I mean, this is going to be a sidebar here, but of my students who fail my class, 100% of them score less than 50% on their homework.
Yeah.
It's an effort. It's an effort thing. Like they have all the answers. They still don't do it. And because they haven't done it, they don't perform well on the test. So even though the test carries the majority of their weight, and they're like, well, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, exactly what we're talking about, right? Procrastinating. I have 2 weeks to do this assignment. I'm going to procrastinate and wait. You know, and that's not necessarily because they're perfectionists. It's just they're procrastinators. But to the point of the perfectionism, yes, I make sure I show them, you know, you don't have to get it right on the first try. You can check your answer. You can resubmit answers as many times as possible. And it's just, it becomes regular pattern. And I do it all year that way. So
that's great. One of the things that now I want to do is go back and look, because I feel like my statistics for, you know, we're not giving out Fs right now, really, in our district. We're doing no grades and incompletes and whatnot because of the pandemic. But I would be willing to bet significant sum of money that it would track that, you know, my students who, you know, are in the same pattern as you. I think the power of having that number, especially in the modern age where so many of us are so data driven, I feel like if I could just like remind kids of that like once a month, right? Like, hey, this is what happens when you don't do the work, right? Like, this is the success versus failure rate, would be really helpful for them. But another thing that I was thinking about while you were talking about the speed tables and the particularly the multiple attempts on doing the assignment is, you had talked in a podcast a while back about how you're really open to kids arriving at the correct answer in different ways, or have like, I don't know the appropriate math term for it, but having like that multiple paths to get to the place. How much of that is a part of your idea around perfectionism versus not being a perfectionist?
I don't know if it's because my like art side of my brain kicks in and like the creative juices are like, just slap some paint on the board and call it an artwork. You know, like there's lots of ways to call art art. I mean, look at my background here. This is my grandmother's work right here. And some of it, I'm like, what is that? You know? And so I don't know. It's like, there's always different ways to do it. There's different ways to pursue, but at the same time, there's like general like laws that guide us and principles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, again, I'll use the artwork behind me. Like, there are shades of blues and greens and, you know, yellows and stuff, like kind of on that spectrum of the color wheel, because it's supposed to blend and it's supposed to all be there. But, you know, like, as long as I'm following general patterns that create this, you know, visually appealing thing, or mathematically I'm following my order of operation rules and, you know, some of the, you know, addition property of equalities and that stuff, so I'm moving things around properly, like, do it in whatever order you want. I'm going to show you my recommended route, but by no means am I the perfect route, right? And I, you know, I'll show them why I do it that way, because, you know, through my experience, I make less errors that way. But if they prefer doing it a different way and they're not making those errors, then do it.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's something that I think would have helped me a lot in math, because one of the things I struggled with was like that plug and chug process. And I think, like, I remember when I was like, when I do addition, for example, I'll either try to get to a multiple of 10 or 5 for addition and subtraction and then figure out the numbers from there. Or because I'm a football coach, right, I'll work with sevens really easily, right? Like, I can do sevens, no problem. So I'll kind of work from there. But I remember distinctly in a couple of math classes where I was trying to explain how I arrived at an answer, and I was just told, no, that's wrong. You do it like this. And it's like, it's such a shutdown that you're like, well, I don't know how to do it that way, so I can't. But how am I going to get perfect at this, right? How am I going to get on that path if the entry point that I'm being given is a hard no? So,
right.
I think that's a really great thing that you're like teaching these principles. And then on top of that, right, I think there's some higher order thinking skills that go with, here are the guardrails, and then you can kind of figure out through the mess, right? Like, Picasso is considered one of the greatest of all time. So go back to your artwork idea, because like, we know he could draw or paint something that looked completely lifelike. He chose not to, like, he intentionally broke rules for a purpose. Right. And I think the same thing with any of the stuff that we're doing, applies. So that's a kind of a side tangent, but I wanted to ask you about that with relation to math, because I know you're open to that stuff.
No, I love that. And I'd encourage people in pretty much any subject area, if you can make it happen, like that idea of like you called it the shutting it down early in the learning process, keep the barrier to entry like very low, like open that pathway as wide as possible.
Yeah.
Let them come at you with something, even if it is like, you know, a unit off. Like, okay, I see where you might have thought that because of XYZ reasons, here's something that might get us back in the right path, and like slowly wiggle them back in, like on the right trail. But I mean, if I'm in, speaking of trails, right, I love hiking, and we're Pacific Northwest people. There's beautiful hikes and trails all over the place. Like, if I wanted to go hike to either the top of a mountain or to a lake, I do not have to take one trail to get there, right? Like, there's a couple different parking lots in itself that I can start at. And even along the way of that trail, I can, you know, take little like off beaten paths here and there. And there's not just one way to get me there. Now, there is a general vibe, and I want to follow that general vibe. It just kind of like our guardrails, but yeah, like open that thing up early. Let people just jump in, have the engagement. Once you've got them on the hook, now let's get them back into a tighter pathway until we get them to the final destination we want. So, and that's where the connection really comes in, right? Is, again, you want to understand your students. You want to understand how to hook them. You want to be able to encourage them and not make them wrong. You want to be able to bring them along some story that you're telling that gets them to the final destination. Like, even in math, like, I tell stories all the time. I'm like, you know, when students are like, wait, do I put the X's with the X squareds? And I'm like, do you put your apples with your bananas at the grocery store? No, let's put them in separate piles. You know, like, and then, you know, we do like multiplication. I just get weird with it. And they're like, wait, but if I do X times X squared, it becomes X cubed. I was like, yeah. Because a banana times an apple turns into a bun apple, you know? I started thinking of Brian Regan and the crayon man on his sales mission of his trophy. And, you know, just the whole thing derails for a
while. Yeah, but that's good for the kids. And I went to a whole other place with like apples and bononos. So that's...
apples and bononos. Absolutely.
I'm glad that you brought up the barrier to entry thing, because that just reminds me. I think people are going to notice, both with this connection activity, with that speed element that we both talked about, you this week and me last week, there's obviously a very strong connection between failing as learning and perfectionism being an enemy in the process of learning. And I think that we're going to see a lot of crossover in this. We noticed it in this episode, and I think we'll notice it in the big idea too.
Right. And I want to make sure that even early here, we're not saying that perfectionism is a bad thing, but when perfectionism prevents us from starting, that's an issue, and we need to combat that. And to a certain degree, like on the extreme, anything is unhealthy. And we're going to talk a whole lot more about that in the big idea as we get there. But try to work on some of those things that get away from always grading on accuracy, just like we've talked about for 2 weeks now, and then allow as many opportunities as you can for success. We'll see you guys back here on Thursday for the big idea. Always learning at Peak State.
Make it a great day.